Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
How are you, man?
Here we are, back again. Just several hours ago, we were in here cranking out part one of our three-part EPL season preview. And now we're back for part two.
With 30 minutes left in the transfer window.
Yeah, I know. The time's ticking. By the time people have heard this, it will have ended. But I'm kind of stunned at like the lack of deadline day activity.
Yeah.
We're not used to this.
I think people aren't prepared to quite make the panic buys we thought they would.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe they're not as flush with cash as the world has been led to believe.
Oh, they are.
Well, I'll tell you what. We teased this last night in part one, and we're really thrilled to be able to do this now. Our featured guest here in this three-part preview. He's made over 100 appearances for Leeds United, more than 50 appearances for Manchester City. He was England's starting right back at the 2002 World Cup. Now you can hear him as part of BBC Radio as their correspondent. You see him on Sky Sports. It's the one and only Danny Mills on with us now. Danny, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, guys. You good?
We're good. We're good. JJ and I were talking. Are you feeling ready for this season? I feel like last night when JJ and I did the first part of our preview, we were both saying that this kind of snuck up on us in a way that it hasn't in the past. I don't know if it's the World Cup or if it's the transfer deadline ending before the season begins. Are you like caught off guard in the way that I feel like we were?
Yeah, suddenly it's season starts in 24 hours, 48 hours time here in England. And I think you're right, because of the World Cup, I mean, it was incredibly exciting. Some of the most exciting games we've ever seen, just the one 0-0 draw. I mean, sadly, the USA weren't there, but they'll be there in definitely in 8 years' time when they host it. So that's good. But I think with the early transfer window as well, all the talk, all the speculation has been about who's going to move where, not necessarily who's playing each other. And all of a sudden, so I'll be at the first game or the early kickoff on Saturday in England, which is the 12:30 Newcastle versus Tottenham. And yeah, it doesn't feel like I'm quite ready. It doesn't seem like the season has begun.
Danny, a number of podcasts and radio shows previewing the season have talked about this issue, and I want to get your thoughts on it because you lived it in the 2002 World Cup. 1 minute you're in the biggest stage marking Roberto Carlos and you know, against Brazil in a World Cup quarterfinal, and the next thing you're back to the day-to-day mundane week in, week out of the English Football League. Is that something that mentally players have to transition to, or is it just a myth? Can they switch it on and off like that?
It's not a myth. It does take some transitioning, but not possibly in that way. Players are used to doing that, playing European football, you know, against big clubs in big stadiums, big atmospheres, and then having to go and play Premier League football. And this is not being disrespectful, but against Watford, Bournemouth, Leicester, teams like that, after you've played against Real Madrid or Barcelona, whoever that may be. The hardest part of it is coming back and not feeling completely ready, not feeling like you're up to speed or fit enough. A lot of the players in England have only been back maybe a week or 10 days. Some of the England players opted to go back into training a little bit early, but that means they've had a maximum of 2 weeks off after the World Cup. And that's very, very difficult. And the problems that brings around is, one, they're not quite ready. The conditioning that they have, they're not up to speed as yet. So they're being thrown into the start of the season where they're expected to perform at the highest possible level, and their bodies aren't quite ready for it. You know, it's going to be a little bit of a shock to the system. So you've got to be careful about players picking up injuries or not quite being ready. It's a cliche, but everybody says it takes 6 or 7 games to get match fit and get that sharpness. That takes even longer if you've missed out on pre-season and coming straight back into it. The other problem that you have mentally is round about October, November time, when here in England, it's probably dark when you get up for training at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. It's dark when you come home from training at, you know, 4 o'clock in the early evening. And you start to feel mentally tired. Most of these players would have been playing for 18 months, almost solid. And you just start to feel a little bit weary. It's the best job on the planet, playing football. But it starts to feel like a job. And sometimes it can be, okay, I've got to get up again. I've got to go training. And you can lose a little bit of that edge. And it only just takes 5% to come off it. And suddenly you're not quite the player that you were. And the third part of that is, these players that haven't had the right conditioning through pre-season, we've seen it many, many times before, tend to pick up little injuries, little niggly injuries around about November time, where mentally they're fatigued, their bodies are starting to fatigue a little bit, and they just feel a little bit low about themselves. So Sir Alex Ferguson used to be fabulous at it. He used to send his players away for a little 4 or 5 day break with the family, no football whatsoever, almost one at a time. And he said, OK, you go away, have some time with your family, just chill out, relax, do whatever. And sometimes that's all you need. You just need that little hit of refreshment to come back and beat your top game.
Danny Mills joining us here on Caught Offside. Danny, you mentioned before you're going to be at Tottenham and Newcastle at the weekend. Now, I don't mean for this to be a leading question. I'm not trying to get a particular answer out of you. I really am curious. I've got the transfer, like live transfer activity in front of me, and still with about 13 minutes to go before the deadline, I see nothing for Spurs. Now, I've heard both sides of the argument with what they've done and haven't done in this window. How should Spurs fans be feeling right about now?
I would say they should be feeling a little bit disappointed. Let's be honest, Tottenham last season would have got £130 million, maybe, for where they finished in the Premier League. They would have then got more money, TV rights, because of the Champions League football. Yes, OK. I said about 18 months ago, Tottenham have to be very, very careful that they do not become the new Arsenal. And I meant that because they're building this fantastic new stadium. They've got a very strict wage structure in place. And what happens is if you can't attract top players, the likes of Harry Kane, Dele Alli, Christian Eriksen, all start to look around, and we're seeing it a little bit with Toby Alderweireld already, they look around and say, hang on a minute, I could be playing for more money at a top club and really challenging for trophies. And if we're not bringing in signings, that starts to cause a little bit of a problem. You've got all these players from Tottenham that have played in the World Cup that will have a little bit of fatigue. So where is the strength in depth in that Tottenham squad? I would be very concerned for Tottenham, the fact they've made no additions whatsoever. Even they were trying to buy Jack Grealish at £25 million. I mean, he's probably, realistically, they'd have had to maybe pay 40. People think that's an overinflated price. But would they sell Harry Winks for £25 million to somebody else? No, they wouldn't. So how can they expect to get a championship player, you know, for that sort of money that's done very, very well? As Tottenham fans, I think we'll all be very, very disappointed. Obviously, the manager won't come out and say that directly, but I think Tottenham need a bigger squad to be able to compete on all four fronts.
Danny, we were doing our previews last night, and there was a couple of teams that maybe we overlooked a little bit. And I know you talked on Sky Sports recently about Cardiff and Neil Warnock, and they seem like
they seem like they're going down, I think.
Yeah, right. And that didn't go down too well with Bluebirds fans, but I see your point. I was looking at some of the stats in terms of possession, which, I mean, they don't mean, you know, everything, but Cardiff don't really keep the ball. Warnock is a very, how shall we say, rudimentary style of play. Have they any chance of surviving?
A very, very slim chance. I won't be putting any money on it, that's for sure. When you look at their squad, they are a squad of championship players that have done incredibly well. And I have to say, that is down to Neil Warnock. Neil Warnock's forte is the championship and getting teams out of the championship into the Premier League. He has always struggled when he's been in the Premier League, when he's had to change his style of play and deal with bigger players and everything else. So Cardiff have gone down the route where they do have a little bit of money. Obviously, they have a Malaysian owner. But the players they've even brought in are still championship quality. And that is the problem that they will have, I think, this season. Possession isn't hugely a problem. When you look at what Leicester did, you know, I think they had, an average 38% of possession and won the Premier League. But they had real quality players and they all played above where you expected them to be. I'm just not sure Cardiff have that quality, and I'm not sure where Cardiff are going to score enough goals. We've seen the likes of Huddersfield, Brighton, all struggle because you can't score goals in the Premier League. I mean, it'll be interesting, and it'll be interesting to see if they play that very direct brand of football that often comes with Neil Warnock. It's a little bit cut and thrust. We have a new systems come into play now in the Premier League where managers can get yellow and red cards. I expect Neil Warnock to pick up a fair few of those before Christmas.
He'll get them in his dressing room at half time, Danny.
Well, definitely. But I think it'll be an incredible journey for Cardiff. If they manage to survive, it will be a minor miracle.
Now, kind of the opposite of what you're saying with Cardiff. I mean, every year it feels like there is a smaller club that manages to emerge in some way. Burnley last year qualifying for Europe. Obviously, you referenced Leicester and their title win. Southampton kind of used to be that side. Is there a club that you see this year who's a potential candidate for something like that?
Well, they're not really small clubs, but two of the clubs that have come up, Wolverhampton Wanderers, clearly have spent an awful lot of money. They won the championship last season, but they had Premier League quality players. Obviously, you've got the super agent that is a big, big part of that football club. And, of course, he is bringing in players of real quality. They've added to that. So I think Wolves could be a real surprise and could finish maybe in the top half. And also with Fulham. Again, played fantastic football last season in the Championship, which is really suited to the Premier League, the way that they play. Teams allow you to have a little bit more possession if you've got a little bit of quality. They've added to their squad. They've got a lot of money. They've got big backing. They've got big ambitions. So I thoroughly expect Fulham and Wolves to do quite well this season and be sort of mid-table and maybe even above.
So with Fulham and Wolves expected to do well, and I can see why you'd say that, Danny. It just seems all a little bit congested and something's got to give. If you're looking at a side maybe from last season that managed to just hold on, who do you think's on the precipice now that will eventually go down?
Well, it's interesting. I did all my predictions yesterday. Went through it all, you know, right from top to bottom. Cardiff, no surprise, were right at the very, very bottom. I've put Huddersfield in at 19th. I think they're going to struggle this season. They survived by the skin of their teeth last season, you know, beating or getting a result at Chelsea, you know, very late on in the season to survive. Can they do that Houdini trick again? I'm not sure they can. And that's no surprise with the budget that they have. The other team that I think might struggle this year, and this might be a bit of a surprise to one or two, is Bournemouth. They haven't invested an awful lot of money. They had a couple of spells last season where they had a really bad start to the season. And then there was talk even at one point that Eddie Howe's job may well be under pressure. They went through a very, very barren spell. And I don't see that they've added too much quality to that over the summer. And I think that Bournemouth are the opposite of Cardiff. They're a nice team to play against. Their manager is nice. They play nice football. It's a nice place to go. The weather's nice. They're just a nice club. And I think sometimes you need a little bit more than that. And the fact they've now been in the Premier League for, what, 3 years, three seasons. I think at this stage now, you know, getting over £100 million every year, you know, just to stay in the league, I think they should have made a little bit more of an investment challenge.
Danny, kind of a random one for you. Do you have, like, a favorite player in the league right now? Not necessarily somebody that you'd say is, like, the best player in the league, like Salah or Kane, but do you have a guy that you just kind of have like an irrational love of?
I tell you what, it used to be Diego Costa. love Diego Costa. I mean, you know, love him or hate him, he's just in your face, right up and at them. But I think the player that I would go and pay to watch at the moment, and I'd just love to watch, is Kevin De Bruyne. He is the perfect midfield player. You know, he can do everything. He's box to box. He doesn't dive around. He puts his foot in. He takes a tackle. When he gets kicked, he gets up pretty quickly. He scores. In the last minute of the game, he's still putting in 110% effort. I think he's not flash. He's not on the front pages of magazines. He's not all over social media. He's almost like the perfect footballer at the moment. And I think, you know, if you're a parent or you're a kid looking to become somebody, Kevin De Bruyne has got to be up there.
Danny, you played in a very, very good Leeds team that, well, let's be honest, probably underachieved on the whole. How would you stop Kevin De Bruyne? How would we say that midfield of Leeds have stopped him?
I think we were lucky. We were allowed to be a little bit more physical back in the day, which was a bonus. You know, we were always taught, you know, stop people at all costs. I think, you know, when I looked through my career, I had 7 red cards, I think. If I'd have played probably 10, 15 years later on, I might have been 77 red cards for some of the tackles I made. But it was, you know, it was a level playing field. Everybody played in the same way. And no, he's very, very difficult to stop because he can do everything. You know, he can drop deep. He can come late into the box. He has an incredible range of passing. You know, physically, he's strong. He doesn't particularly look it because he looks quite slight. But he's just an all-round, very, very good player. And I think if I was, he's in my fantasy team for sure. And I think, you know, if I was a Premier League manager and I had the choice to buy one player, that would be Kevin De Bruyne.
Not to give away any secrets, but did David O'Leary ever say to you, look, Danny, you've got X or Y facing you on the wing? Early doors, get in, smash them, do something.
No, that was how I was brought up, in honesty. You know, I'm 41 now, so when I started at sort of 16, 17 and getting into the first team, it was mandatory. You know, first tackle was always free. There was never a yellow card on the first challenge, and you had to go straight through the back of your winger.
Wow.
And then secondly, he would get up and, you know, probably the next header, he'd try and elbow you. And it was just as it was. Thankfully, the game has evolved massively, so that's a big bonus. You know, players are now protected, and I think, you know, that's what they need. Some of the injuries that players took unnecessarily in my day were extreme, and career ending at times. You know, we don't want to see that anymore. I think it's gone a little bit too far, where sometimes we see a good tackle, you know, and I hate the phrase it's over aggressive when somebody wins the ball. You know, it's man on man. It's about, you know, you don't get over aggressive tackles in American football. It's two guys running at each other. You know, whoever's the strongest wins, and that's how it should be in football. I think we've gone a little bit too far, but no, I think, you know, I always say to people, look, I did whatever I could within the laws of the game, and sometimes not within the laws of the game, to win football matches. And I think every single professional player has a little bit about that about them.
Danny, you were talking before about Kevin De Bruyne and how great he is, kind of emblematic of what Manchester City were last season. A lot of people are looking at Liverpool as kind of the number one contender to maybe unseat City atop the league. Is that about right to you? Do you think Liverpool have done enough to maybe narrow the gap somewhat with Manchester City?
Yeah, I think they've done very, very well. They've done some fantastic business. Naby Keita, who they bought last year technically, comes in midfield, and I think he will do very, very well. Obviously, defensively, they look a lot surer now that Van Dijk's had a good half season, and looks like he'll start. The goalkeeper, obviously, is a huge plus. Can that front three be as good as they were last season? Is Mo Salah going to score 45 goals this season? That is my only doubt. He might have an unbelievable season and score 30, which is still incredible. But where are those other 15 goals going to come from to try and not just match but overtake Manchester City? I think Liverpool will come second. I think it'll be a little bit closer than last season, but there's just something missing about Liverpool at the moment that says Man City will still win it.
Danny, somebody who's impressed me last season in his managerial role, but also in this pre-season, and just the way he deports himself, the way he talks, he's just in a very impressive person, is Chris Hughton at Brighton. And for my money, if Chris Hughton has another good season at Brighton, I really think he should be in line for potentially whatever one of the next top jobs comes up. What's your thoughts on the job he's done there?
I think he's done an incredible job. And you have to look back, I don't know, 10 years, Brighton nearly went out of business. You know, we're playing in a tiny little stadium with a running track around it with almost just one stand, and suddenly now they've got a brand new stadium at the Amex, playing in the Premier League. Chris Hughton has always been unlucky in the past. He's got teams up from the Championship, and then he's been ousted from his job for no fault of his own, not really for performance reasons. You know, and again, he's a really nice guy, and people say nice guys don't do well. Well, Gareth Southgate proved that wrong during the World Cup for England. Chris Hughton is of that mould. You know, he's measured. He knows what he wants. And I think you're right. You know, you're looking at, there's a lot of managers like that. Chris Hughton is one. Sean Dyche is another. Two managers that, because they're from the British Isles and they don't have fancy sounding names, tend to get overlooked an awful lot when some of the big jobs come up. But both jobs that those managers have done on the budgets that they've had to contend with have been absolutely superb.
Last one for me, Gareth. Danny. You mentioned Gareth Southgate there. I know you're friends with him. Have you guys gone for a coffee? Have you discussed the summer's happenings? What's his mood now after that pretty, I suppose, pretty incredible summer for England?
Oh, it was amazing. I've not seen him since, to be honest. I got back. I think he was at home for 4 days. We were texting each other while he was away at the World Cup, and we spoke regularly. I did speak to him when he got back, but his wife had him under lock and key. So he wasn't allowed to leave the house for 4 or 5 days until they went on holiday to the United States. I think he's just about back, so no doubt we'll catch up for a coffee, a bit of breakfast. But no, I just think, you know, again, he's measured. He knows what he wants. He's very, very good with the media. He's very, very good with players and with people. And I think what he has done in England is transformed everybody's thoughts about the national team. It takes all the pressure off all the players, and suddenly now they played with a bit of freedom. They enjoyed it. And there was a huge connection with the fans and the players now. And that was all down to just the finer little details, the open media days that they had. You know, they've been able to talk openly about depression and players talk about their problems. I mean, Gareth, I think, spoke about Fortnite and Love Island, which is a reality show over here. You know, all these types of things that keeps him in touch with the younger generation on social media. And I think he was able to bridge that gap from managers in the past that had a bit of a disconnect with fans. And it made such a difference. I think the players felt that support, embraced it. It became a two-way thing. And now I'm looking forward to catching up with him. I'm a little bit disappointed, of course, that he didn't win it. I was looking forward to being Sir Gareth Southgate. But maybe that'll have to wait for another 4 years' time.
Danny, last one from me. I asked JJ and I kind of batted this one back and forth last night in the preview. The fan in you. You know, the season starts tomorrow. The fan in Danny Mills, is there something that you're looking forward to in particular this season? Like for me last night, I said, as a Spurs fan, I'm excited to be out of Wembley and into a place that Tottenham can call their own. JJ basically read me poetry about fresh cut grass.
Yeah, Danny, he doesn't, I don't think Andrew understands what, like the football fan growing up, back where we grew up in the British Isles, watching the games in early August, when you see the new patterns, the perfect pristine fields, you get that buzz. Andrew thought this was, he didn't understand it.
No, it seemed a bit much. Do you have anything that you, the fan in you, is particularly excited about?
I think as a fan, as a player, it's the atmosphere. You know, you just want to be back in that atmosphere. You go to pre-season friendlies. I was at the Community Shield last week, Chelsea versus Manchester City, and it's all a bit flat. Nothing's on it. It doesn't really mean anything. The Community Shield's not even, it's not really a proper trophy. If you win it, it tends to be. If you lose, it's just a friendly. But I think now it's seeing those fans, seeing the passion, you know, in the stands, on the terraces, you know, people getting really, I suppose, it makes their weekend, it breaks their weekend. And this is what football is all about. It's not about players, it's not about managers, it's not about teams, it's not about trophies. It's about fans, about their hopes, their dreams. And for a lot of people, you know, it's the most important thing in their life.
I love it. I love it. Can't wait. Can't wait, man. You've been so generous with your time. I know these are busy days here as we're getting set for the start of the season.
No problem.
Well, thanks so much, Danny, and hopefully we'll catch up with you down the line.
Take care.
Danny Mills, of course, you can BBC, Sky Sports, you'll see them all throughout the season.
The Football Daily podcasts are something I listen to because they're really, really long on a Monday, and they have like phone calls in and things like that, and they're on BBC Radio 5 Live. You can download them. They're really interesting. They have some really good guests on. And Danny's on there opining as he does. Didn't give me the reaction I really wanted to my cut grass poetic thing, but he knows what I mean. It's when you come up the steps of a football stadium, or when you're watching on TV, as was most common for me, you see the new lines.
I get what you're saying.
I remember 1996, the Riverside Stadium, because the intricate patterns they had cut at Middlesbrough.
Yeah, and I think the same of the King Power and Leicester, how, you know, with what they used to do, although I don't know if they still are doing that.
And it's that weird weather. It didn't matter how bad the British summer was or the Irish summer was. In September and August for the football, the weather was always magnificent. It was always like an Indian summer, an extended summer. But how dare you? How dare you try and throw me under the bus with Danny Mills over poetry?
Well, he was a bit poetic in his own right, but in more of a fashion that I can understand. Like, fine, the grass, yes, it's wonderful, it's beautiful.
Tanned men in new shirts,
tanned bodies, but you know, but I I truly do appreciate what he says about the camaraderie, about the, it's about fans getting together, you know, here in the United States, waking up early, going to bars, yeah, and stuff like that. That's the fun of it. It's really awesome having it back.
A mouthful of Guinness at like 8 o'clock in the morning and you're like, this isn't terrible.
By the way, it is now, as we are recording, it's now 12:07 Eastern time, which means the transfer window shut 7 minutes ago.
Mm.
I have it in front of me.
All right. What late business happened?
No, I mean, look, stuff may, who knows? You know, sometimes things trickle through after a window closes. If you're looking for deadline day drama, I certainly hope that's the case, because right now the biggest move that I see here is Bernard going from Shakhtar to Everton on a free.
Ooh. Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but it's not. I suppose if you're an Everton supporter, it is interesting. But it's not really the kind of high profile wheelings and dealings that we've come to see on the final
but
day.
But piece it together a little bit. Walcott, fully fit Seamus Coleman. You've got Lookman. You've got Bernard now. Rickarlison into the mix.
Yeah. So how does this, I mean, Bernard is kind of a winger, right? And Theo Walcott will play. Well,
he's going to play up front off Tosin.
I don't know.
I have to think more about it. But
yeah, Arsenal always experimented with making Walcott a striker up front.
They've kept Pickford despite the interest that everybody had. You're not feeling great about the center of the defense, but maybe you can make do if you have someone screening in front, which they have players that can do that. And all of a sudden, with the new manager bounce. Well, first of all, Everton fans should be happier because we expect Marco Silva to play a better brand of football than...
Of course, than what Big Sam was
Sir Sam of Allardyce did. So there's a bonus. And as much as people may look on Everton as, you know, the poor relation on Merseyside or maybe not that glamorous a club, they have a history of their fans wanting them to play constructive football. So that'll get them happy. Maybe there's a little bit of a bounce here, Andrew, where they have... dare I say it, do they have a Roberto Martinez first season syndrome where they play really well and then things drift away for...
Right, they finished fifth under him, right?
Ah. Yeah. And they were very good. Yeah. I remember some standout performances going to Arsenal in particular where they were really good. And that's where I thought they could be great. But
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, we were planning... We're going to do part three later tonight. You'll see that later this evening on your Caught Offside and ESPNFC podcast feeds. But as part of that, we were kind of planning on recapping all of the big moves on transfer deadline day. But fortunately, there are none. So it looks like we'll be able to stay under an hour, which is really what's most important. I'm obsessed.
If our podcast was just... You know the sound the fridge makes?
Like the little droning
the
noise?
The drone. Yeah. If our podcast was a drone... But it came in at 58 minutes.
Yeah.
You would be delighted.
I'd say, all right, that was a success.
You are a time...
See you next week.
You are a time lord. You are the Doctor Who of podcasting.
It's only because I've seen the statistics in front of me, and they're just so... They're so clear, JJ. Well, they really are clear.
Well, listen, if people are listening to this podcast and they haven't heard the... They don't understand the tanned men reference, tanned men in shirts.
Yeah, fast forward to probably about an hour 14 last night.
Yeah. You got to get through it. Some of the good stuff is at the end.
I typically find that to be the case. Like all these people who probably don't even know, we didn't do it last night, but our red cards, man of the match, things that we'll obviously bring back during the Premier League season that we is a staple of the show. So many people miss them. It's some of our best stuff. I've always said we should just do a podcast 1 week of just red cards and man of the match. That's just not, like, go wild with them.
It's not a bad idea. Maybe we'll do that. I just have a vision in my head now of Danny Mills kicking Kevin De Bruyne into the air. That was a fair admission by him.
Yeah, I mean, look, the game really has changed. We hear about that all the time.
It's not that long since he played.
I don't know if you and I have ever had the philosophical debate on that, on whether or not you prefer that kind of rough and tough style of the 70s, 80s, 90s, or how it is today, where it's a little more manicured.
Is there any way to mix the two?
Yes.
Maybe if I could come into the Premier League round 99-2000. I loved that. I thought that was a nice blend. By the way, he played in Leeds teams that spent a lot of money, were challenging, went to Champions League semi-finals, etc. They were physical, but I don't think they were filthy. They weren't dirty like. Leeds got a reputation in the 70s that they genuinely deserved. But I never remember them being that bad.
Yeah.
The philosophical debate is something we should have. Over a pint some night, and we'll podcast it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Clinking glasses.
Yeah.
Sound effect.
Yeah, and right at the very end, you're like, you don't know me, man. You don't know anything.
You and I have been out many times together. Have you ever heard me sound like that at the end of a night?
No, but we've imbibed.
Yeah, I know. And I don't get like that. How dare you?
You run off with your arms flailing.
Who does that?
Crying into the night.
This is what people do when they're drunk. They cry and run off with their arms flailing.
When me and you have an argument, yeah. Anyway, this is going off track completely.
But this was fun. Awesome of Danny Mills to give him to give us as much time as he did.
Yeah.
Like I said, Sky Sports, BBC, you'll see him. And we'll be back later tonight with part three, where we'll go through all of your mailbag questions and give you our predictions on the season.
I say all of them, as many as we can get to.
Yeah. Well, hey, this was fun, my friend. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.